And it is today's topical currents. Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman. Happy Valentine's Day to you, Bonnie.
Thank you. Same to you.
You're looking lovely today, as usual.
Thank you. Happy Valentine's Day to all of you listening.
Well, on this St. Valentine's Day, we begin with prolific author and communications expert Leah Lowndes. Her latest book is How to Create Chemistry with Anyone. She says we should strive to be sanely in love, not crazy in love. And she joins us from New York City. Welcome to you, Leah Lowndes.
Thank you so much, Bonnie and Joseph. You gave Bonnie a lovely compliment. That's what women really like, more than candies or flowers on Valentine's Day.
That's true. Well, today being Valentine's Day, many couples are or will be celebrating. But what message do you have for those without a special someone?
You know, I think that if you don't have a Valentine or a very special someone in your life now, I think it's time to start looking and using some of the very special techniques that are proven to lure the proverbial stranger across the crowded room and win their heart. Very different techniques from winning someone's heart to keeping someone's heart. Very different chemicals involved, as a matter of fact.
So why do some people light up our interest and others don't?
Oh, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Two reasons, actually. One is it comes from our childhood. You see someone across the room, and, wow, there's that blam and that spark. Well, it comes from when you were between the ages of 1 and 5 years old. We all form what is called our love map. Now, our love map is the type of person that maybe 15, 20 years later, even longer, that we could fall in love with. And because we're surrounded by hopefully loving parents and relatives, usually that person has a spark of the same qualities that people who were around you when you grew up had. I don't know whether you have, but I've often noticed how sometimes I wonder whether two people walking down the street are brother and sister or whether they are a couple.
Could these first impressions also be formed by watching TV?
Yes, everything that we do in life, from anybody that we meet, from the way our kindergarten colleagues, other kids treated us, to everybody you've ever loved, everybody you've ever hated, everything in your life affects the aura of who you are. And when I mentioned the love map earlier, unfortunately, the love map can also have a very detrimental effect in that if you were, heaven forbid, abused as a child or around people who didn't care for you, 20 years later you could spot someone who reminded you of those people and you could feel a spark for them because it's a familiar dynamic. It's like the bad boy syndrome.
So that's where we have the dopamine rush?
Yes.
And you say that can work against us in those cases?
Very much so. If it's someone that you are attracted to who is not right for you because of something in your childhood. The other reason to finish answering your first question there, Joe, is that Mother Nature has a great say in who we are attracted to. All of us have a very particular immune system. It's filled with parasites and germs. Nothing wrong with those. It's just that those are our particular parasites and germs. And since Mother Nature's role is to populate the world with the healthiest plants, animals, and human beings, she wants people to be attracted to people who have a complementary immune system so that their eventual offspring would have the healthiest immune systems. So Mother Nature also has a big say in who we feel that immediate sexual spark for.
Is that communicated by pheromones?
No, pheromones actually are smell. But yes, once you get to know someone, you will not like the smell of the person if they are not the right person to breed with.
But what about older people when reproduction is no longer an issue?
Then definitely we still fall prey to the influences of our childhood, and we even have a much wiser background, much longer background of who to choose, who is right for us and who is wrong for us. So, no, it does not affect the propagation so much, but we are influenced a lot by that love map.
Tell us about, you're just talking about it, I guess, peripherally now, the major histocompatibility complex and how it influences chemistry.
Yes, that is indeed your smell and the immune system that we talked about earlier. It's called your MHC, and that's the name for what we were talking about.
Okay. What about cohabitation before marriage, and what time period are you advocating? You suggest cohabitation before marriage.
I sure do. I think it should be almost a federal law. when we first feel that zap for someone, it is dopamine, the ecstasy chemical, rushing into our brain, into the what they call the pleasure center of our brain, the caudate nucleus. And that causes a blam very similar to a blast of cocaine. Nature decrees that blast, that want to jump your bones, love you, passionate, can't live without you, dopamine rush, has a lifespan, a shelf life of only 1.5 to 2 years. And tragically, people, when that starts to wear down, they think we don't love each other anymore. And golly, it can be just the opposite, because the chemical of really true long-lasting love, it's called oxytocin, mitigates against the testosterone and against the dopamine. So when real love is setting in, it can actually drive the other down.
What do you mean it mitigates against testosterone? You're talking about the bonding chemicals, which I'm going to ask you about, but what do you mean it mitigates against testosterone?
It drives them down. If you put oxytocin and dopamine in a bottle, they would battle. I'm not sure of that, but I do know that when the oxytocin comes, the thrill chemical, the dopamine, and the testosterone especially is driven down. When a woman gives birth to her baby, her oxytocin goes up 30 times. And when she's feeling so much of a bond with this child who came out of her belly, she really doesn't have time to think about or biologically deal with the other chemicals that are rushing through her body.
So you're saying that the shelf life, because it has a 1.5 to 2 year shelf life, that couples should cohabitate for about 1.5 to 2 years before marriage?
Yes, because they should let that first dopamine rush die down, because the dopamine actually blinds us to a person's qualities because we're so thrilled by them. And the dopamine is messing up the neurotransmissions in our brain. We really can't see that particular person clearly. And Mother Nature, again, wants us to be blind to certain qualities because her main interest is, of course, for us to copulate and produce.
Could you expound a little bit on, all of us must know people like this, a couple bind together and all of their friends say, what does she see in him? Or they seem like such an unlikely couple. What influences that? Somebody just seems to be completely mismatched.
Exactly. Well, again, it can come from the love map of what they felt comfortable with when they were a child, what the familiar dynamic was, and it also could be Mother Nature's influence of wanting them to reproduce. So these are two things and it could be a healthy love map, or it could be an unhealthy love map. And this very often is what draws people to each other.
How do we really know when someone is the one? It seems so hard to know that.
I know. If you wait and wait for the rush chemical to die down, and you wait for your brain to clear out and for the transmissions to become clearer in your brain, then you can judge a person's real qualities and decide whether or not they are right for you. I also say that you really should not make a choice until you're age 25, because we have something in our brains called myelin. And myelin is almost like a grease tube around our neurotransmissions. And in babies have very little myelin. As you grow older, you gain more and more of this insulation so that your brain signals from your amygdala, from your limbic system, can go more directly to your prefrontal cortex, which is the wise part of your brain, the thinking part of your brain, the part of your brain who knows really who is right for you. And by the time this myelin is fully formed, you're much better able to send the signals right to the thinking part of your brain. Before you're myelinated, zap, 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 the neurotransmissions can go all over the place and you can be overcome by emotions.
And that happens at around the age of 25 and that it's developed?
On the average, yes. On the average, yes. That's why teenagers are always falling in love and out of love, and they're so emotional and think this is the only person in the world they can love. If I could possibly succeed in just this one thing in the book, is to help very young people understand that, no, it's not the end of the world. Probably this is not the person for you because you have not waited the what should be obligatory 2 years.
We're speaking with Leah Lowndes. Her latest book is How to Create Chemistry with Anyone. And we're going to take your calls when we come back. 1-800-743-9576. If you want to talk about your relationship or maybe not your relationship with Leah Lowndes, 1-800-743-9576. Or you can email radio@wlrn.org. We'll take that break and we'll be right back.
And we return. It is today's Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman, Valentine's Day edition, with communications expert and author Leah Lowndes. Her book is How to Create Chemistry with Anyone. Leah, how about a website where people can learn more about you and your books?
Yes, it is People Magnet. It's one word, peoplemagnet.com.
So you say that male and female brains are very different, and we shouldn't expect someone of the opposite sex really to understand us. How do they differ?
Oh, Bonnie, you've asked again the million-dollar question. We are married to practically a neuroanatomically different species. We do not understand how vastly different the male and the female brain are formed, and we should be much more understanding of the opposite sex. For instance, it's typical. A man doesn't want to talk about his feelings, or a woman will say, "How do you feel about that?" Well, here's just one example. The linguistic part of our brain is in the left brain, and the emotional is in the right. Now, there are the two hemispheres, but a man has a much stronger barrier between the linguistic and the emotional. It's called the corpus callosum, and his is like the wall of China compared to a woman's white picket fence. We can go back and forth between our emotions and what we're saying, but it's such a challenge for a man, and he hates to be asked something that he really can't do. So do not ask a man how he feels about something. Many times a man will say to me, "Well, what's that got to do with what we were talking about?" Well, in our mind, it has everything to do with it, because our brains are more like a ball of yarn. Everything is all attached, whereas a man's brain is more like a series of boxes, and he can put a thought in a box, and then it takes, because his synapses, the rivers between his neurons are a little wider, it takes him a little bit longer to jump from subject to subject to subject. They can concentrate sometimes far better than we can, because they are more directed toward whatever it is they're thinking about at the time.
What's the best way to make a good impression in a first conversation? I suppose that's the most important way to start.
Well, if you want to spark them erotically, here's the thing that a woman can do. She sees the man that we call our quarry. She spots her quarry, and what she should do is, just very conservatively, do not look at all cheap, but let your eyes travel ever so slowly down his chest, not past his belt buckle, and then look back up and give him.
You're making me feel a little uncomfortable here.
That's it. That's the whole point, don't you see, Joseph? That's the whole point, to make you feel a little uncomfortable, which, in fact, shoots the dopamine up into your brain, and also the testosterone. A man's testosterone goes up 3 times just talking to an attractive woman. So when a woman looks at his body, his testosterone just will shoot through the roof. So the perfect storm of the testosterone and the dopamine will give him a simulation of that spark that would have come naturally had Mother Nature had something to do with it and had your love maps matched.
What about if the first conversation's not in person? People do so much online dating now, and the first conversation can be either an email or by phone.
Absolutely. And there are ways I have ways in the book to attract someone online. One of them is a woman should wear red in her profile picture. Red is a hot color. It gets the neurons jumping around more. And there have been studies where women wear different colors in their profile pictures, and they got more responses when they were wearing red.
Hmm.
For a man, he should be very aware of what's in the background of his picture. If he's in front of his driveway and there's a old truck or a motorcycle or a Subaru or a Mercedes, a woman is going to have a very different image of him. It does not mean she's a gold digger, but evolutionarily we are programmed to want to have someone who can take care of our unborn children and ourselves. When you write to someone online, don't start sentences with I. Talk about you. I noticed your gentleness, or I noticed your confidence and admire that, or whatever it is, but concentrate on the other person when first writing to them.
We have an emailer. Janice says she's a mother of two young boys, 3 years and 6 months. What can I do to help create positive love maps?
Oh, that's wonderful. Excellent, excellent question, Janice. I think that the important thing is to, when you have your boys' girlfriends around as they get older, to make sure that that you don't say anything against any particular partner, but ask them lots of questions. What do you see in her? What do you think she would feel about this? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And now, the main thing, I think, as I remember now, if they're very young, a lot of touching. The power of human touch is phenomenal. Babies brought up in an orphanage who have been touched more grow up with more oxytocin in their system. So give lots of love and touching, and that literally will create oxytocin in their systems, and men who have more oxytocin in their systems are able to hold much better relationships long-term when they get older. Also, for mothers whose babies are not born yet, always have the husband hold your infant as soon as he's born, because once again, it's the oxytocin that forms and the vasopressin, another chemical, that forms by him holding his newly born infant.
Leal, we're short on time, so let's take a call. This is Robert. He's in Delray Beach. Hi.
Hello, Leanne.
Hi, Robert.
Are you there?
We sure are.
Have you heard of Dr. Melvin Page? Anyway, he developed a system of measurements of the lower arm and the lower leg that show what kind of endocrine function the person inherited. He found out the woman has opposite endocrine function, and
we have a really bad connection, Kyle. Leal, can you answer his question with what you were able to hear?
I'd like to. If you can repeat it, perhaps I can. I didn't hear Kyle very well.
Yeah, very quickly.
Dr. Melvin Page developed anthropometric measurements that showed the genetic potential in the endocrine glands.
In the endocrine glands. Yes, absolutely.
Posterior pituitary secretes the oxytocin and the vasopressin.
Yes.
Those measurements. A woman has the opposite measurements of a man.
Is that something you can expound on, Leal?
I don't believe there's opposite measurements. I am not quite clear on that, Kyle. But no, we all have testosterone, we all have oxytocin, we all have vasopressin in our systems. Varying amounts, of course. A man has 10 times more testosterone, and a woman usually has more oxytocin, the bonding chemical, in her system.
You know, of course, you were being facetious, Leal, but we have an emailer who complains that this idea that people living together before marriage ensure a better match, that actually it's proven that persons who live together before marriage actually have a higher divorce rate. Is that on?
I hadn't heard that statistic, no. It could be that people who live together... Well, this is in days gone by.
She's also coming sort of from a religious side also, which is fine. But,
yes, absolutely. Well, people who have a commitment to something higher than just the relationship. Yes, they very often do stay together longer. Religion can tie you together. Being part of a particular society can tie you together. Having family absolutely can tie you together. So I don't think it's just the divorce rate. I think what we should judge here is the happiness rate.
Well, we don't have much time, so I just wanted to ask you what the keys are to sustaining a successful long-term relationship.
These are one of the things that, I wish people would check these out things out before they got married. Having the same beliefs and values in life, extremely important. Supporting each other's growth, and this is especially important in today's world with women becoming more prominent. Support the goals and aspirations of your partner. And also, always make them feel good about themselves. Just knock the big C, I call it criticism. Criticism is the big C, the cancer of relationships. And make them feel good about themselves as well.
Well, we certainly want to thank you, author and communications expert Leah Lowndes. She joined us by phone from New York City. And her book is How to Create Chemistry with Anyone. And happy Valentine's Day to you, Leah Lowndes.
Yes, Leah, thank you.
And to you and all your wonderful listeners, thank you.
Food and Dining, up next. And we return. It is today's Topical Currents, Valentine's Day edition. I'm here with co-host Bonnie Berman. And welcome to our food and dining segment. Joining us is my longtime friend, colleague, chef, author, and syndicated columnist, Linda Gassenheimer. She's brought chocolates and lunch, and I didn't do anything. But Linda, will you be my Valentine?
Not without doing something.
Thank you. Linda, you're dressed in red. How perfect.
Hello. What happened to you?
She's wearing her heart on her sleeve.
Okay. Happy Valentine's Day. Valentine's Day to you and all of our listeners. So what's this day without some special treats? And we've got some here. Donné Burstyn. He's the marketing director from Moët Chandon. And he's brought champagne. This is Fred's
right.
Happy day.
That's
welcome,
right.
Donné Burstyn.
Hi, Linda. How are you?
Great to have you with us. And also joining us is megastar Martha Stewart. And she has some delicious Valentine ideas for us. She also has a new book out. It's
and
called,
she'll be in town soon, too, right?
Yes. It's called Meatless. Welcome, Martha Stewart.
Hey, how are you?
Great to have you with us. And we'd
I'm dressed in red also.
Oh, you are?
<good. laughs>
Great.
Yeah.
Glad to hear that, Martha.
but it's not lingerie, right?
No, I am filming some segments for my baking show, and red looks really good on camera.
Well, I'll remember.
Unrelated.
Okay, if you'd like to join us, give us a call. That's 800-743-9576. And Fred Tusk is with us, and he's the wine columnist. And you can read Fred's wine column in today's Miami Herald. Fred, your happy day today.
Oh, we're going to talk about cognac, and then we're going to talk about champagne. I am a happy man.
You are happy. Martha, I'm sorry you're not with us. We've got the studio filled with champagne.
Wow, lucky you. What a nice way to celebrate Valentine's.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, am I right, Martha Stewart, in that thinking that Valentine's Day is one of your favorite holidays?
No.
I'm not right? Well, you told me that once a few years ago.
Oh, maybe then. I don't have a boyfriend right now, so it's not very romantic at the moment.
Well, I understand that you're coming to Miami soon, Martha.
I am.
Maybe I'm looking up a little bit.
I'm looking forward to it so much. I love Miami, and I love what's going on down there. So I'm appearing at the South Beach Wine and Food Festival.
Right.
And that's going to be so much fun. And I'm also the mistress of ceremonies at the big tribute dinner for Nobu.
That'll be very exciting. I understand that you're going to be doing a cooking demonstration at the Grand Tasting Tent on Saturday.
Oh, yes, yes. I like to do that because the crowd that comes to this festival is so avidly interested in food. And they're such, and they're knowledgeable. They seem to really pay attention. They contribute to the conversation. They raise their hands and ask questions. And it's a really nice crowd.
Well, that's great.
And they seem to come year after year because they make a big weekend of it. And so so we're looking forward to it. Lucinda Scala-Quinn, my food editorial director, and Sarah Carey, our everyday food editor, are coming with me, and we're going to cook from our my new meatless cookbook.
That's what I wanted to ask you about that, Martha. Meatless. It just doesn't seem like Martha.
Well,
why meatless?
Well, it's funny. People evolve. And I've been eating actually a little less and less meat in my diet for several years now. My daughter, Alexis, is a 100% vegetarian. Her children are being raised with very little meat. In fact, I haven't ever seen them eat meat. They eat some fish, but not meat. And I like a lighter diet now. It's just something that I really look forward to. So I eat a lot of grains, a lot of vegetables, a lot of...
I want to ask you, what about protein? I mean, a lot of people who have a vegetarian diet, you know, looking for protein, and they'll eat a lot of saturated fat.
Sorry about my phone. Somebody's not picking up.
Well, that happens on air to us.
Yep. Sorry.
So how do you know, protein without a lot of saturated fat? What's your suggestion?
Well, I raise my own hens, so I have lots of delicious eggs. I do eat those. I can also get a lot of protein from various grains like quinoa, and which I love. I also cook lots of. I don't eat a lot of cheese either. I'm finding that I wish I could, but I just don't. But I do eat Japanese food, and I do eat a lot of fish.
Oh, so you do eat fish?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I eat fish.
Okay, so if we're going to have a wonderful Valentine's dinner tonight, and some people who might want the meat, can you give us a quick and easy, wonderful, delicious recipe?
With meat?
Sure, with whatever.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, actually, I would probably make fish tonight. I would probably do a lightly poached or steamed halibut, which mm-hmm. I love. Because it's meaty and tasty. I would steam with that some, I saw some beautiful asparagus in the stores. And another thing that's really pretty right now are artichokes. And I would cook an artichoke for my first course. First course.
Would you put a sauce on the fish?
I would make maybe a simple beurre blanc.
Beurre blanc, Martha, is not simple. Tell us what it is. Well, tell me how you can make a simple one.
Beurre blanc is so easy to make. You just chop up a shallot, uh-huh. cook it in a little bit of white wine vinegar. You can use red wine, too, but that is very nice in the white wine or champagne vinegar, and reduce it, strain the shallots out of the left, say a third of a cup down to about 2 tablespoons. And then just stir in cold butter until it thickens and the butter is melted. And that's your beurre blanc.
I suppose Mont Chandon would go well with that.
That would make a fabulous beurre blanc, first of all. You could use that as a wine, sort of instead of the vinegar. And that would be so good. And then you, of course, can drink it with your fish.
And how do you make a good artichoke? I go to a certain restaurant and they grill it, and it's so much better than just boiling it, and it's too bland that way. How do you suggest?
Well, I love steamed artichokes. So what I do, they're sort of steamed boiled, and so I trim the artichoke, I turn it upside down on a rack in a pot of boiling water. In the water, I've put maybe the slices of a lemon, some parsley, if I have some other herbs, I'll put other herbs in there. And I salt and pepper, and I put the artichokes upside down, and I steam them for approximately 45 to 50 minutes, depending on the size of the artichoke. And you test the core with the point of a sharp knife. And if that will easily pierced, it's done. Then I take the hoary core out of the artichoke with a spoon. I open it up and scrape it out. And then I serve it with either a hollandaise or a really good mustardy vinaigrette. There's nothing better. Oh, and another thing I made recently is I put cheese souffle in the center.
In the center of the artichoke?
Of steamed artichokes, and I baked them. and it's souffle puffed up.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah. So after you've cooked the artichoke and you've
cool it,
and you've made this concoction,
your souffle,
yep,
and then bake them as you would a souffle in a dish, and it is unbelievably beautiful and so delicious. People came back for seconds of those.
I'll bet. But I bet making that souffle is not so easy. Martha, we have
it's
to get
easy.
To...
It's easy. Soufflés are very easy.
What's the tip to watch for in an easy souffle?
Well, here's a secret.
Okay, give it to us.
Once you make your souffle base and incorporate the egg whites, put it into your souffle dishes, which you have buttered. And if it's a cheese souffle, you have coated the buttered souffle dish with Parmesan cheese, for example. Or if it's a sugar souffle, you coat the sides of the souffle dish with turbinado sugar, and then you put it in the microwave for about 30 seconds.
Mm.
30 seconds. It starts to cook the center of the souffle just perfectly, and then you put it in the oven, and it puffs up for the number of minutes it calls for, and you have the perfect souffle.
So you put it in the microwave before you put it in the oven?
Yes.
Wow, I've never heard of that.
I'm writing that down. That sounds like a great thing.
Everybody here is writing this down, Martha.
It's a secret.
Okay.
And it works. It really works. And that way, you know, I sometimes have, you know, 16 or 18 people for dinner, and I often serve souffles because if you know the secret, you can get them ready, you pre-cook them in the microwave, and then pop them in the oven, and they're ready for dessert.
Well, can you hold it between it goes to the microwave and into the oven, or does it have to go straight in? You can hold it for a while.
Hold it for a little while, yeah.
Uh-huh. Wow. Well, you mentioned my favorite thing, Martha, and that's dessert.
Me too.
Okay. Well, then tell me, what kind of dessert should we have for Valentine's Day?
Oh, I would make a beautiful lemon tart or a pear tartatin, which is very easy.
You keep telling us it's very easy, and everybody's here kind of saying, uh-huh. Mm. What's easy about a tart tatin made with pears?
Well, you peel 4 pears or 5 pears,
uh-huh.
core them. You melt some sugar with a tiny bit of water and make a caramel. Place the pears in the caramel. Oh, and soften the caramel with like 4 tablespoons of butter after it reaches the right color. Then put the pears in there. Round side down, then cook them for about 20 minutes in the pan, in the caramel.
Mm.
And have your round of pastry. It can be puff pastry, pâte brisée, pâte sucrée, cut large enough to cover over the pears and about an inch bigger than the diameter of your cast iron pan. I like cast iron for tatin. And then put that in, put it in the oven, bake it until the pastry is brown, and turn it out onto a plate upside down. You know, it's inverted.
Right.
And that's it. So I made a bunch of them yesterday because we're doing that as a baking bonus on my new baking show.
Well, tell us about this new baking show. What is that all about, Martha Stewart?
Well, on PBS, starting in April, as sort of an appendage to my cooking school, we're doing baking school. And wonderful recipe. So we have 26 half hours already prepared, and really lovely, the basic recipes everybody should know, and I demo them, and we do about 3 variations. If it's, say, puff pastry, we give you the basic recipe for puff pastry, and then 3 or 4 things to make with that puff pastry. Or if it's pâte à choux, like cream puffs, we give you 3 or 4 recipes to make with the pâte à choux. And we go through pretty much the classics. So it's pâte sucrée, pâte brisée, it's biscuits and scones. That's a really nice one. Ending with a lovely blueberry cobbler with a biscuit top, drop biscuits.
Wow.
It goes on and on.
So this is going to be a new show coming out in the autumn, is it?
No, April.
Oh, in April, very soon.
Yeah.
And that's the only TV show you're working on at the moment?
We're working on a pilot for a really fun show, and that will be announced in the not-too-distant future.
Well, Martha Stewart, I appreciate your joining us. This sounds wonderful.
Thank you.
All these
it's a lot of fun, and it's very nice to talk to you, and I hope I see you in Miami.
Yes, so Martha, you'll be coming to Miami, and you're going to be at the Grand Tasting Tent on Saturday morning, and
yes.
you're going to be emceeing the big
night.
Dinner
yes.
that night. So,
yes.
And Martha, it's beautiful and warm and delicious here.
I cannot wait.
We
just had the most beautiful snow. Check my blog tomorrow, the Martha blog, because you'll see the most beautiful snow you've ever seen. It's all gone now because the sun came out, but it was a fairyland this morning up here. Mm-hmm. Just a fairyland.
Well, it's a fairyland here. We're enjoying the sun.
Oh, good. Well, yeah, you're lucky, guys. Okay.
Thanks,
bye.
Martha Stewart. Thank you
bye.
For joining us. Well, I'm Linda Gassenheimer. We've been talking with megastar Martha Stewart, and soon we're going to be talking with Moet Hennessy's and Moet Chandon's Danae Burstyn. We'll take a short break here, and we'll be back with more. And we're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we've been talking with Martha Stewart. She's been giving us her secrets for cooking, some of her cooking tips, really great ideas. And her latest book is Meatless. Also with us is Danae Burstyn, the marketing director for Moet Chandon. He's brought champagne
yes,
in the
I
studio.
Have.
Before we get to the champagne, we're going to get to dinner in minutes, because my dinner in minutes might go with the champagne.
Awesome.
What do you think? Okay. So dinner in minutes is grilled lobster tail with black bean and rice salad. And Florida lobster is in season right now, and it's great if you want to cook some for special Valentine's Day or any time of the week. And so you can get that recipe for grilled lobster tail on my website. That's at dinnerinminutes.com. I butterfly the lobster, and then I grill it with some sherry and butter and garlic, and it's really juicy, really good. Also, if you want to look for another Valentine's recipe, it's in today's Miami Herald. And today's Miami Herald, we have some really juicy shrimp with love apple pasta. Mm. Love apple being, as we all know,
tomato.
Oh, thank you, Fred.
We don't all know.
Yeah, no, we don't.
Apparently.
But Joe knew. It's tomatoes. That's
okay.
At dinnerinminutes.com. Go there, and you can also follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer.
I thought you were going to say love handle for a minute.
Well, that comes later.
I think we should go to the champagne. You guys have already been, I think you've been tipping into it already.
No, but we're about to, I guarantee you.
Fred, your happy day. Bubbly.
Absolutely, absolutely. Donnie, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Seems to me that Hennessy must be a wonderful place to work. You sell cognac, you sell Dom Perignon champagne from France, Domaine Chandon sparkling wine from California, mm-hmm. and a bunch of others.
Yep.
Do you feel like you have the best job in America?
I do. I absolutely have the best job in the world. I work
in the world,
not just America.
I go along with that.
I work for some of the finest champagnes you can find in the market. Uh-huh. We've been around for years. We're about to celebrate our 270th anniversary of Moet and Chandon this year.
Wow!
So as you can see, it's phenomenal.
Now, Hennessy cognac is really good stuff. But what is cognac, and how is it different from brandy?
Okay. Cognac is a brandy, but not all brandies are cognac. In order for it to be a brandy, all the grapes have to be grown, distilled, and bottled within the cognac region of France.
Which is a geographical region.
Which is a geographical region.
Okay,
it's kind
great.
Of like, Fred, there's uh-huh. something staring me right in the face here.
Oh, let's open
What's
this.
What's that? Oh, there's a bottle here that needs to be opened.
Oh there, okay.
Hear that?
Yeah, right. All right.
That's it's a wonderful sound in the morning, right?
So what are we hearing here?
Well, we're hearing, what is that you're opening there?
So what we have here is the Moet Brut Imperial, which formerly, many, many years ago, was known as the Moet White Star. And what we've done is taken this product and we've made it the same around the world. So in the past, Moet White Star was for American consumer only. We had a very high sugar dosage because at the time, Americans thought they liked a sweeter brand. Mm-hmm. This is the market you would find everywhere else in the world, which is the Moet Brut Imperial. So for the first time, we've standardized our base model line for everywhere in the world. So if you go to France, you'll taste this product. If you go to Spain, you'll taste this product. You go to Russia, you'll taste this product. So this is the new Moet Brut Imperial. The sugar dosage has been significantly reduced down to about 6 grams, which is the standard for Moet around the world.
And why was it that Americans liked it sweeter?
Well, it's just the American
just
palate.
Okay.
It's just the American palate. We tend to like things sweeter. We say we don't, but we actually
we spent a few centuries drinking Kool-Aid, and it took us a while to adjust, I think.
And Coca-Cola.
Well, now, Hennessy Cognac is doing something that I think is very difficult, and that is you have a base price cognac, the VS, which is $20 a bottle, and the top of the line Hennessy Richard goes for over $3,000 a bottle.
Yikes.
Now, how are you able to stretch one brand over such a huge range of prices?
Well, it really goes to what's in each bottle. If you look at the base brand, the Hennessy VS, which is very special, it really has a blend of about maybe 20 to 30 eau de vie, aged for very short amounts of short amount of time, but roughly about 7 years. When you get to the Hennessy Richard, that's a blend of 100 different eau de vie, going as far back as like 1865. So even the eau de vie are over 100 years old. And they're all Grand Cru grapes. So that's what you're paying for. You're paying for well-aged wines.
And this is made from grapes, right?
Made from grapes. Excuse me, Uni Blanc Snap Fresh grapes. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're holding this in our hands.
Oh, yes, we are. Let's have
a little toast.
Oh, there you go.
Nice.
Can we gargle it on the air? Yeah,
whatever. Ooh.
So what you have there is the Moët Impérial, which I spoke of before, which is an assemblage of Pinot Noir, Pinot Meunier, and Chardonnay grapes. So about 20-30% of Chardonnay, 30-40% Pinot Meunier and Pinot Noir, and then a little bit of reserve wine added back in.
Very nice. Yeah. Very nice.
So is this available in the stores now?
Yeah, this is available in the stores now. It's been on release for about maybe 8 months now. So Total Wines, your Whole Foods, your Publix.
So even at Publix, but yeah. What is the price?
Well, price varies depending on the retailer, but
approximately
$36.99 to $40.
Right.
Which is not bad.
Yeah. Not
for
this quality.
There are a whole lot of them well over 40.
Yeah.
In the same category, yeah. Now, one last question about cognac. Hennessy Richard, the top of the line, is sold in some of the most elegant, expensive lounges, but the VS Cognac is also teaming up with a hip-hop artist named Nas.
Yeah.
So you're aiming for sales in the inner city and that sort of thing?
Well, we've had a strong association with the African-American consumer for many, many years, dating as far back as the 1950s and 60s. So this is just a testament to our commitment to the community, and we've identified a brand ambassador that resonates with the consumer. So we've identified him, who's an icon in hip-hop. So two icons meeting up together to really show the world what Hennessy VS is all about.
Sounds great. Now, champagne and sparkling wine makers always say that bubbly goes with almost anything, from raw oysters to grilled veal chops. Some people even say a big red steak. And I see that Dom's website, maybe for Valentine's Day, is offering a $200 Valentine's package. That's a bottle of Dom and a box of Godiva chocolate truffles. So
yeah.
you're drinking champagne with chocolate.
You can drink champagne with everything. One thing we're really urging Americans to do is not only save champagne for celebration, it's a wine. Drink it as a wine. If you want to have it with fried chicken, you can. If you want to have it with pizza, you can. No one has ever said that you can only drink champagne with certain types of food. We have a lot of sommeliers in America who, you know, I have studied in France, and they put these stigmas on our brand. You can drink champagne however, whenever, and whenever you want.
So it's the new Thursday night drink.
Absolutely.
Now, you're going to, Moët Chandon is going to be part of the Food and Wine Festival.
Yes, we are.
So what is it? What are you be doing?
We're now doing what is now called the Moët Hennessy's The Queue, formerly the Bubble Queue. So not only will you be able to sample Moët Chandon champagne at this event, you'll also be able to experience Belvedere vodka cocktails, Tennessee cognac cocktails, Tin Cane rum. So we've opened it up to our entire portfolio for this event. Mm.
Well, and I understand there's still tickets available for the queue.
They
so,
are. Snap them up.
Yeah, snap them up. Well, we've had a very tasty, delicious week here. Thank you to Martha Stewart for joining us, and Donnie Burstein. Thank you for joining us and for this Moët Chandon.
Thank you for having me.
Champagne we're drinking right now. Fred Tasker.
I think I'm going to hang with him at the festival.
You think so?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, barbecue and champagne. How can you lose?
On the beach.
On the beach.
On the beach.
Mm. All right. Fred, your happy day.
My happy day. I'm a happy man.
It sure is. Bonnie Berman and Joe Cooper, you ate well today, and I brought you chocolates as well.
Yes, you did. Thank you very much.
Thank
happy
you so
Valentine's
much.
Day to
You've
you.
Had a big day. Next week will be our one-hour show featuring stars from the South Beach Food and Wine Festival. We'll have Trisha Yearwood, we'll have Anne Burrell, and we'll have many others. Big day. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me then.
Yeah, thanks for listening today. Our producer is Richard Ive. Technical direction from Caroline Brader Watts. Paul Leary is online producer. We have free audio archives of this and past programs at our website. That's WLRN.org. Find author and book links, discussions, photos, and more at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tomorrow at 1, it's Ed Bell and the South Florida Arts Beat. Topical Currents returns Monday with a program about the human belief in God. What is the brain chemistry involved? What makes atheists? Now an all death and mayhem calendar for February 14th. On this day in 1884, 129 years ago, an oddity, on the same day at the New York home of Theodore Roosevelt, his mother Martha dies of typhoid fever, and his wife Alice dies of kidney failure. And on this day, 1929, 84 years ago, the infamous St. Valentine's Day massacre on Chicago's North Side. Posing as cops, Al Capone's men brutally bump off 7 rival gang members. One more before we call off our fatwa. On this day in 1985, 28 years ago, Ayatollah Khomeini of Iran calls on Muslims to kill author Salman Rushdie because of his book, The Satanic Verses. Today's recipe at dinnerinminutes.com. So we leave with a thought from Teddy Roosevelt, the 26th president, quote, "Optimism is a good characteristic, but if carried to an excess, it becomes foolishness. We are prone to speak of the resources of this country as inexhaustible. This is not so." This is Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman. Thanks for making Public Radio your companion today. Stay tuned now for the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
This is